five, six, seven, eight.
Season four. Yay.
Woo.
Season four.
One, two, three, four.
That is how it works. Yes. Very
I love
good.
Counting.
I know you do. You really love counting. Okay, here we go. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Gilmore to Stay with Tara and Haley. I'm Tara. This is Haley. Hi, Haley.
Hi, Tara. I heard the music, like the intro music after, like in the gap between you saying the part before the music and then the part after. I heard it in my head. I was just like, music, 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 music. And then you started talking.
Well, great. I'm glad. I'm glad you.
Next time
oh, yeah.
It.
I don't know yeah. that I could sing it. It's a bunch of guitar strums.
You don't sing guitar strums when you listen to music?
It depends on the strum. Mm.
We sing differently.
We have different singing methods. Anyway, yeah, as you could tell from our word, we are here to talk about season four, a season that Haley and I, if you've been following us for any amount of time in the last like couple months, we just absolutely love.
Adore. We love season four.
We really do.
I was going to say
that
four for season four, which I did, but
we adore season four. But before we really get into it, speaking of the number four, Haley and I just hit 4 million streams on Good Morning to Say.
4 million.
And by Haley and I mean you guys. You guys hit 4 million streams on season.
Y'all have streamed this 4 million times.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. It's amazing. I can't believe it.
Here in like the least serious podcast you've ever heard in your life, just two girls talking about a show from 24 years ago.
I know. It's true. But we're so glad you guys are here. What a beautiful milestone to get to.
Yeah.
And especially how perfect that we just finished season four as this was happening. And I was like, what a better way to celebrate.
Yeah. My immediate thought, though, was you're 4 years old. Like when you were like, oh, four things, I was like, you're 4 years old.
That is classic.
4 million years old.
Classic line. I love it. I'm very excited to talk about season four today. But one last thing before we get into it, we are actually going to be starting another Patreon tier. On our Patreon, we have the Vicious Trollops tier. We had asked some of you on our Instagram story what you wanted the name to be. We had a few really great contenders. My first thought was D.A.R. Darlings, and that was actually the first one that was submitted, which was...
That was crazy.
Very liberating. I was like, yes, great minds.
Yeah.
But a lot of people said Vicious Trollops, and I just was like, what a perfect...
I hadn't even thought about that one.
Me
That's
either.
So good.
It was so, yeah.
And
so
a couple
good.
People recommended it. And
yeah,
it was,
no, we
it was
had
great.
A lot of people. We had a lot of repeats.
Yeah, that one was repeated. D.A.R. Darlings was one that we got a lot.
Yeah.
Someone said, oh, there was a D.A.R. that was a play on Gilmore to Say. I forget what it was. Made me laugh a lot. Maybe not that hard because I don't remember it. But... I just remember, like, there were a lot of, like, good suggestions, but when I saw Vicious Trollops, I was like, how did I forget about Vicious Trollop?
I know.
So, we're going to have a new tier full of Vicious Trollops who will get everything that super cool party people get, which is the weekly episodes, mm-hmm. merch discounts, community on Discord, and close friends access. But now you will also be getting early access to our episodes on Sundays that will be ad-free. You will have live podcast recordings where you can come and join us while we record mm-hmm. and see the absolute nonsense
mayhem
that actually doesn't make the cutting or hits the cutting room floor, rather, because there's quite a lot.
And then the last feature that we're offering is that we have a Patreon only Gilmore to Consider line that we actually developed during the SAG strike. So if you feel like your voicemails might be getting lost in the shuffle because our public line gets a lot of traction, we have a Patreon exclusive line that you can call into, and we're going to be doing one Patreon exclusive Gilmore to Consider every single month. So you'll get a bonus episode. You can join us as we record live once a month. And you'll have early access to our Tuesday episodes on Sundays,
yeah.
ad-free.
And ad-free.
And you get all the things that super cool party people get.
Yeah. And the first episode that we'll be recording live in May will be Written in the Stars, season 5, episode 3.
Of course, it's the introduction of Logan.
A new blonde enters the villa, if you will.
Not the villa.
That's what the hot new blonde enters the villa, and his name is Logan, and it is in that episode. And why am I blushing? Oh my god, I'm in
We're
high
so
definition
excited.
Right now.
Hey, your nails match your butter yellow
I know. Kurnak,
you look so cute.
I noticed that when I was in the doctor's office and I had to wait until the doctor left to tell my mom about it.
We're like, Mom, look.
I was like, look.
Look at my nails. Like, look at my sweater.
Cool. But I like, I'm glad that you guys are excited about it. So I did, because she was just like,
great, Haley.
I love you. Thank you so much. Incredible.
No notes. No notes, Kathy. She gives no beats. She's like, okay.
Sure. Why not? But yeah, back to Vicious Trollops. This will start on the 1st of May, which we actually laughed about because the first, I guess, early access episode you'll have is Jason Gilmore to consider.
Yeah. What a weird one to start with.
What a weird one to start on. But like, why not? That's where it fell in the episode trajectory. So that'll be the first episode. You'll get an extra episode every month and you'll get to come watch us record live, which we're really excited about and scared.
No, it'll just kind of feel a little bit almost like our, not quite like our Galentine's Day recording, but it'll just feel like we're all there together, which is fun. And we haven't quite figured out which features we're going to be able to access on StreamYard or wherever we choose to do it. But it'll also be nice to potentially maybe see your messages, comments, etc. Because there are so many times when Well, there are so many times when we record things that we like, you know, if we can't think of an episode title or a character or something, an actor, and like we're like, oh, we'll have to like
wait,
ask our besties and see what they say. Yeah. And so this time it'll
be can ask them then
live, which is kind of cool. So I think that there's something really fun about that and something that we've already kind of experienced doing it with Gilmore Galentine. And we always have a lot of fun with those. So it'll be really cool to know that you guys are there with us. And
yeah,
that's what I'm mostly
excited
about.
It'll feel like Gilmore Hive Mind. Because like sometimes we forget things all the time, or like we're trying to remember lines or what something someone said in a previous episode, and they'll be right there. Fun. I'm excited.
It'll be very exciting. So that tier is actually going to be $12 a month. Our Super Cool Party People tier is $8 a month. Life and Death Besties is $5 a month. And we are actually going to be saying goodbye, saying farewell, ta-ta, to our 6 a.m. crowd. We're just going to continue to only offer 3 tiers. But yeah, if you're interested in joining any of those tiers, it doesn't have to be the Vicious Trollops, but what a great name. If you want to be a super cool party person or a life and death bestie, you can join us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/GilmoreToSay.
And now on to season 4.
So with that, let's talk about season 4. I have been so excited about this. And I have to tell you, I listened to the end of our season 3 recap that we released November. Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't. I wasn't sure if you were going to.
No, we didn't. There are so many ways, as y'all know, that we like to kind of surprise each other with things. I wasn't sure if you had listened to it to get your rankings.
I was doing that because I didn't think that you had.
Sometimes we just don't talk to each other enough, which is hilarious because we talk to each other all the time.
Every day.
Something that I actually was wondering, and I know we're not going to get to rankings until later, but I'm curious if, and we both know where we stand in our rankings and where we decided to stand at the end of season 3, if you wanted to hold off on actually ranking every season in order until we get to the end of our Patreon rewatch next summer, because I think it would be really exciting to rank it just based on the ones that we've watched. So today we would rank seasons 1 through 4, and then like by the time we get to the end of next summer and we've gotten through the revival, which is so crazy to think about, I wonder how different they'll be from what we initially set the first time in rankings back in 2022.
So my suggestion for this is similar to what you were saying. Okay. I think that personal, we should still do all the seasons because we have seen them all. But I think story-wise, like, because we rank them both in terms of our personal preferences and in terms of storytelling, I think maybe with storytelling, we go season by season. So like, we'll only really rank 4 today. But personal, I think we should do all of them still. Because like, how much has that really changed and how much is it going to change? Which I think maybe that's the fun part of it changing. But like the story one, I feel like maybe we...
I don't know. Because like
the seasons we're watching.
Season 4, I feel like really changed the game for us. Watching seasons 3 and 4 was very eye-opening because season 3, I kind of realized like, oh, this is a little chaotic. And then season 4, I was like, oh, wow, this is actually very yummy in a way that I hadn't really thought about before. I know that in our last episode about season 4, we did a Gilmore to Consider Before our episode with Eli Rallo, of course, kind of answering to a voicemail that talks about how season 4 is very boring. And we were like, wow, yeah, we probably would have said the same thing, you know, when this voicemail came through back in the fall. But, you know, because of that, I feel like my personals might change. I know that like yours might really? Not, but like my personal preferences might change because it was one of those things I had a misconception about season 4, you know, as the
interesting. Wow. I'm really interested to get to the rankings now.
All right. Well, let's get there in a second.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning because that is the end.
That is the end. But we loved season 4. We've talked about it so much on this podcast over the last couple months that we've just been enjoying ourselves so
such bops. Such much.
Bangers. Lots of bops. And to be honest with you, I had a really tough time choosing my least favorite episodes because of that.
Me too.
There were some really, really great episodes.
I had to like go back into my notes and like find storylines that maybe I wasn't as in love with. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think that any of the episodes I picked as my least favorites were like episodes I thought were bad, because the thing that we said is like a mid in season 4 is like a season 1 bop, because they it's were just true. All so good. And so like I kind of had it was hard for me. I had to like go based on a little bit on what we said at the end of our Patreon episodes of like vibe checks.
We did do a lot of vibe checks
because this season was good. And surprisingly, because we were going to start with like quote-unquote the star of the season, stars of the season, if you will. And I think the star of the season was fucking Luke.
It was
Scott
totally
Patterson.
Luke.
This was his season. Like
this was a Luke season.
Slade. Pot Patterson. Scott Patterson, Patterson slayed season 4.
Pot Patterson.
But he like every seed that he was in.
Pot
every...
Patterson.
I'm Pot so sorry, Patterson. Scott
Patterson. I don't know why that really got me. Anyway,
Pat Patterson is up there with Archibald.
Archibald, who's Archibald? Oh,
who's
man,
Pat Patterson. But Scott Patterson slayed this season. Season 4 was like his season. Like all of the storylines that he was in, there's like very few things. For some reason, I don't know why, in my notes I wrote down the only thing that I was like not into with Luke was his marriage to Dana, and I totally meant to write Nicole, and I don't know who Dana is.
Who
literally
Archibald?
I wrote Dana and Luke's marriage, but I was like, I don't know what kind of like autocorrect Dana to Nicole is. Wow, we're really
not
getting off to
Dana.
A great start.
Wow, but, I don't even know what like, Dana.
It's kind of like Tara, like similarly named. I don't know what happened there. That's my B. But not B is Luke. He, like every single episode, top to bottom of the season, just all of his storylines, everything he was doing, chef's kiss, great job.
Oh, so good.
And Kirk.
Yeah. And Kirk. I wrote Luke/Kirk. But then stars of the season, as far as a relationship goes, for me is Luke and Jess. And I just felt like their relationship and that goes hand in hand with Luke being the star of the season. Like if we had to put like top billing, like season Gilmore Girls season 4, above it would be Luke Danes in Gilmore Girls season 4. Like he would be like star of the show, and everything underneath it kind of falls into place in accordance to what's going on in his life and his story. I really, really loved his journey. There's one piece of his journey that I want to talk about in a little bit that I wish was a little bit different, but all in all, him, the epiphanies that he has throughout the season, the way that he builds towards certain relationships, and his relationship with Jess is just chef's kiss, no notes.
And even like seeing his sister, like, and how like they relate.
Exactly.
The Danes family really sold me this season, and Kirk, because I feel like Kirk really like developed as a character and just had like a lot, Kirk and Luke had like a lot of really good moments together.
So many good moments together. It was so good. They had some of my favorite bantery moments, like, oh, so yummy.
Yeah.
And then Kirk developing as a character with Lulu, like kind of veering off his own path in like not just how he relates to the town, but then developing his own relationship was really fun. And I'm excited to see how he continues to do that in season 5, though he will always be like the ultimate townie. I just really love that he starts to kind of flesh him out as an individual.
Yeah.
Less about how he fits into the town, you know?
It gives you major like there's someone for everyone vibes.
Totally.
But I've always thought of season four as Lorelai's season, like in terms of like the Gilmore Girls, which is the name of the show. And I think it's because it's Luke's season. And like, I think that's why, is because like so much of the focus as we went through was Luke. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that it would be a Lorelai season.
Totally. Totally.
A pink season.
It is. It's her pink coat era, which I absolutely adore. And it is a huge season for Lorelai. Like, she really makes a lot of strides in this season towards her dreams, and she has to kind of navigate this new relationship that she has with Rory. She's stepping into this new relationship with Jason, which, speaking of,
there Scooper.
Scooper. Digger. Right. Brett and I actually watched that episode the other night. We're moving through season four, which has been really eye-opening because I've watched it with you, and then I get to watch it with Brett, which are two very different watching experiences to kind of talk about the nitty-gritty and then, you know, observe it with someone who's watching it for the first time. And he cannot stand Jason Styles. He does not trust him.
He doesn't like Scooper.
He does not like Scooper. But we just watched that episode. Scooper. Digger. Right.
I just love the way that she says it.
Scooper.
Yeah. But this season also like had a lot of really iconic moments that mm-hmm. like I didn't realize like are all grouped together. It's like Emily at the mall, Emily in her bathrobe. It's National Baptism Day, tire tubes, idiot. But also like a lot of like the huge iconic moments we like really kind of brush past because we get like fixated on way important lines like your grandfather
and your grandfather
Tom
the contractor Tom, thank you,
like,
yes.
I think that was our most quoted line of the whole season.
Oh my god.
And it was such a throwaway line from Mr. Dean Forrester.
I know, so funny.
But yeah
some great quotes. I mean, tire tubes, idiot, will live in infamy. It's just so good.
Yeah.
She's so perfect. I'm so glad we got the resurgence of Paris Geller, that we're not losing her. As soon as, okay, I think I mentioned this on Patreon. As soon as Brett saw the PG, he was like, no, no.
He knew it?
He saw it right away. He saw it. And I was like, how did you spot that? Like, what the fuck? 13-year-old me, 14-year-old me could never. I saw PG and was just like, la, 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 la. And then Paris showed up and I was like,
oh. Whoa.
Whereas Brett, I don't know, he catches every little thing, which is very fun to watch with him sometimes. But also I'm like, oh man, I wanted that to be a surprise. And it wasn't. But he's very fascinated by Paris's character. And we just watched Ted Koppel's Big Night Out. That was the last episode we watched. And
such a good one.
It's so good. But you know, Paris and Asher are making out at the end, and he's just
I
like,
I do know that.
He went, what? What?
Yeah.
What is that?
That's.
And I was like, yep, that's that.
That's that.
Which, that speaking that. Of, there are a lot of new characters that we get to meet in season four. And, you know, contrary to season three, I felt like in season three, we were introduced to a lot of one-off characters. And not that we're not in season four, but a lot of these characters that I wrote down, we are going to continue to see. And they're going to continue to make waves, or at least make appearances, cameos, in the next season.
Yeah, or they are pivotal to season four. Like, maybe they don't live beyond season four, because I feel like we've met a lot of one-offs in season three that, like Dwight.
Didn't make it past an episode. Dwight. Again. And, oh gosh, Peyton Sanders. You know, people who come and go.
Yeah, but I feel like if we met them, they kind of resurfaced in some ways, even if just a couple of times. Because I was about to say, is like, he might have predicted Paris, but he did not predict her life coach Terrence.
Oh my god.
Who's
Terrence.
Like one of the first new characters we get.
It's true. Terrence, we get, you know, a whole new conglomerate of people because of Yale.
Because we go to and Yale.
Yeah. I know. And there are people like Tess, the RA, and those two girls who are like rude to
the
Rory.
Snooty girls.
Hey, you know what I noticed the other day? I was watching Die Jerk with Brett, and you know how there are a couple of people that come up to Rory in the cafeteria and they're like, if you hear the sound of tulle rustling behind you, run. That girl was the snooty girl from episode two.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about that in
We talked Patreon. About it because she we couldn't find out where she was. We saw that she had two credits, but we couldn't figure out where her second one was.
Oh.
And someone in the comments commented that. Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that. I'm very bad at reading the Patreon comments. I'm so sorry. But yes, that one was something that I was like, oh, I didn't clock that. There's something else that I found out about Die Jerk that I wanted to share with you before we get into new characters. So at the end of Die Jerk, you know, she goes and sees the folk musical and they're singing Michael Row the Boat Ashore.
Yeah.
Brett goes, that's Seth MacFarlane. That's Seth MacFarlane. And I was like, what? He totally picked his voice out. And I went and looked it up on the Gilmore Girls wiki page and it is Seth MacFarlane and his wife singing.
Really?
He picked that out. He goes, that's 1000% Seth MacFarlane. I was like,
oh my God.
I'm going to watch these with Brett, like, before we do it. I don't know. I told him, I was like, we need to catch up because I need you for these episodes. He like catches on to things that I miss because, you know, I've seen this 100 times. I didn't know that. I also don't think I could
pick his name out. I mean, not his name, his voice out easily.
No. But he was like, that's 1000% Seth MacFarlane. And I was like, wow, I cannot believe you just did that. It was very cool.
Wow. No, I never knew that.
I know.
Interesting.
Crazy. But anyway, we do meet a lot of new characters, taking it back to the beginning because Rory is going to Yale. So we've got Terrence, of course, Tana and Janet. We've got Glenn, who we feel a little mid about. We feel very mixed feelings about Glenn. He's kind of creepy in season 4. And I don't know if he goes on to continue to be a predator. But he's a little predatory.
Yeah. And I don't love it because it starts off really kind of innocent and then slowly gets more and more pointed, like with spring break, and then slowly he's dating a teenager, which, like, I mean, he's 19, that's really not that far off, but like then he is telling that girl he's stalking her, and it's like supposed to be funny, but it's like way 2004 funny.
Cause it's 2004 like, funny.
Was it funny then?
Yeah.
Was it funny that, then it's to not be that stalked funny now. By a man at school?
No, it was very creepy, so. But he does provide some comedic relief in a lot of ways in future seasons. So I'm intrigued to see how his character evolves.
No, I did love when he was trying to carry the keg upstairs and Rory told Dean not to help him. Like,
oh my God, he's got to work
like
for
that
it.
That I'm like, yeah. I love that. Or like the rubber band is too tight around his head when they have to make the paper hats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So there's moments of it that I'm like, they're kind of kicking Glenn around that I enjoy.
Yeah, definitely.
But not when he's talking to girls.
No, his relationship with girls is really something that I don't love about him.
He should examine.
Yeah, like the way he talks to Janet about her swimsuit when they're on spring break. It's just like, it just pushes the envelope a little too hard for me that I'm like, ooh, I had never thought about how much I don't like Glenn in this season before, because I feel like beyond this, in season 5, he then just becomes the person who's sitting next to Rory at the Yale Daily News, and he becomes that comedic relief in a lot of ways. And so I feel like I always think of him in that way, and I forget to think about him in all the other ways that we met him and that he's kind of slowly doled out to us in season 4. And I don't really love him. So that was kind of a surprise takeaway for me that I was like, I don't really like Glenn that much.
Glenn, but on top of Glenn, we met Doyle.
We did meet Doyle. And speaking of like moving into how characters evolve, he's one that's going to evolve in a very interesting way. I don't know if Brett sees it coming yet, that, and I don't know that we're necessarily meant to at this point, that Doyle and Paris are gonna be,
there's like no way
that
you could see that.
No, because they really don't have a lot of interaction.
I'm trying to think of like the only interaction that I could think of is when she like leaves the newsroom and they're not, or like when they're all standing there and he's like complimenting her profile on Asher Fleming.
Right.
I can't really remember any other moments. It's mostly just Rory and Doyle that have.
It's a lot of Rory and Doyle. And speaking of, Asher Fleming is a character we meet. Unfortunately.
We do meet. Sad him, but true. Don't we?
Your grandfather. That's probably the only real purpose for him being there. A real joy I felt of him being there. Everything else, I was just like, could you leave now? Could you go? I'm good.
He just, I don't, like, even that's someone that we meet. We met him in Ted Koppel, I think, when, is that when it, when Richard comes to have lunch with them? Yeah. And you don't see that as a love interest coming. Like,
that's why Brett at the end of the episode was like, what? And Yeah. Like, I know.
How did that get there?
I don't know.
We need a little side story, side quest.
Truly.
Like, understanding of that, because that, yeah. Because in that episode, we also meet Pennell and Lott.
We do meet Pennell and Lott. She causes some waves. Hey, but speaking of Ted Koppel's Big Night Out, we just watched that episode recently, and Marty, who we haven't mentioned yet, is a character we get introduced to in this season, and he does look so cute when he comes over.
I told you, he is such a cutie in that episode. He is such a cutie in that episode.
I was like, aw, this is cute. You're cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it.
It's like if that boy in particular came over to you and your family and were like, hey, I just came to find you from this party that I was at because I wanted you to be there, mm-hmm. I'd be down bad.
You know, Richard says as he walks away, like, I like that boy. And I really wonder if they were potentially thinking of setting him up as a love interest because of that comment.
For Richard.
I mean, well, Lorelai says, prove it, drop your pants. So
she does say that.
Great line. But I wonder if they were setting him up as a potential love interest for Rory because of that line. I don't know.
But we never see him again.
No, I know.
Like,
I think after that episode, we don't see him again.
We don't see him again until Rory like sees him outside of the,
Written in the Stars, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very
where'd
odd.
Where'd he come from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Plot hole.
Plot hole. We'll talk about those in a second. But anyway, so kind of stepping outside of Yale, we meet Lulu for Kirk.
Lulu, my darling.
Yeah. We meet Gil. I'm Gil. I love it.
That is one of my favorite lines from this season.
Just him introducing himself.
I'm Gil. Oh. Do we ever have a character like outright introduce themselves like that?
Maybe Dwight.
Because like most, yeah.
But
we'll scratch Dwight from the roster.
From the record.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's one of my favorite character introductions is I'm Gil.
He's just, yeah. I love him so much. I told Brad, I was like, I think you're going to love him. He was so, he just, like, he was looking at Gil. He was like, what is he doing here?
Who are you?
He was like, what is he doing here? And I was like, you're going to love it.
You're going to love this guy.
Nicole's lawyers we meet. Stein, and I don't remember the other guy's name who wasn't Stein, but the Steins and some other guy and a third. Davey. Welcome to the world, Davey.
Welcome to the world, Davey. I didn't write him down. I forgot about him.
That's okay. I forgot about Terrence and Pennell and Lott, so.
That's all right. Did we mention Jason? Have we mentioned that he's a new character?
We haven't mentioned Jason Styles. Actually, I did. Yeah. I mentioned that Brett doesn't trust Jason. And speaking of Jason, we have some new characters to introduce. So we've mentioned Jason. He's obviously introduced. The partnership between him and Richard is introduced, which feels like a character in and of itself because it causes so much tension between Emily and Richard. But on the topic of Davey entering the world, we meet Beau, Jackson's cousin Beau, and we also meet Bruce.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about Bruce. I love Bruce.
Bruce and the crunchy peanut butter that she ate in one sitting.
Yeah. Like, she's strong. She's strength.
She's got a lot of strength and a lot of wisdom, and she doesn't like baby talk. We meet Cletus and Desdemona, the horses.
I forgot about them.
We love them.
I feel like I don't want to bring up Floyd Stiles after Cletus and Desdemona, but we do meet him.
We do meet Floyd and his wife.
He should go to the barn.
And the lawsuit. Another character.
Another character. The only one that we haven't mentioned is Marilyn, who is Trix at her funerals, played by the same actress, but she does come back as Marilyn.
Yeah, Marilyn.
And the only other ones that I have listed that we didn't say is those weird twins that try to give Rory Gilmore a nickname.
They do.
The Hobbit, the Sofa, and Digger Styles.
You got it. You got there.
The Hobbit, the Couch, and Jason.
Yes. A few that were missing. We meet Lindsay's mom in Chicken or Beef. Mm, she's going to make quite a splash in season 5. Only once. Yeah.
You just need that splash one time.
It's true.
You don't need to make that splash multiple times.
Keong.
Oh my gosh, I completely forgot about her. Yeah.
And you're missing two of the best characters, which honestly for me, one of them was one of the stars of this season, but he makes a cameo. He makes a few cameos, of course, towards the end of the season. So I wouldn't necessarily say, like, I wouldn't put him top billing, but he's kind of a star. Liz and TJ.
How did I miss
How
them?
Dare you? And
my love,
crazy Carrie
TJ?
Duncan.
No, yeah.
Honorable mention, yeah, crazy Carrie Duncan.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I didn't write down Liz and TJ.
Yeah.
My loves.
Big deals. I mean, TJ. Like, they yeah. are just, I wrote here, stars of the season, Luke and Kirk, Luke and Jess, TJ, to be honest, because he is so fucking funny. And, like, the way he just comes out the gate, they really, we talked about this on Patreon, they really dumbed his character down a lot. He becomes very, very, yeah. like, dumb.
By season six, he's kind of like a child. He's kind of like Kirk with an accent, is kind yes. of what he said.
Yes. In escrow. Like, he is just kind of a dude. And here he yeah. is too, but I really wish that they had kind of zeroed in on this layer of TJ a little bit more. Because as you yeah. continue to get deeper, like you said, he's kind of more childlike than ever before.
Yeah.
But he is so fucking funny. Like, subtly funny.
Yeah.
Not outlandishly funny. Until, like, maybe,
like,
the tights, he's a little outlandish. But, like, at the beginning,
or, like,
when you
meet
him.
They talk about him having an Etch-A-Sketch. So, like, there are, like, little elements that, like, it's building towards that. But I feel like more than anything, he's very emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
And, like,
he's
he
not
really
quite a caricature
Luke.
Yet. He feels like a caricature yeah. as the show goes on of For what sure. we meet in season four. And I felt like with TJ's character's introduction, I was just like, man, I want to see more of you. He challenges Luke yeah. in a way that is very exciting.
Yes.
And I
He's
like
such
a lot.
A good counter to Luke and mm-hmm. like Luke and such a good balance to Liz, who we meet, and like really seeing that, like, what we were talking about in the last episode, not the Eli episode, but the Gilmore to Consider before that, is that, like, Liz comes in as maybe someone we didn't quite expect, but mm. like having the balance of TJ there makes sense why she would maybe change, because he's really taking care of her. He's a real caretaker.
He really
is. He really cares about people.
He
and
loves that woman.
He's eccentric, but he's really devoted to her, and yeah. it's not going to take any shit from Luke, because he, like, straight up calls him a dick.
Thanks.
He's kind of
You're
a dick.
A dick. It's so good.
I love that. He doesn't sugarcoat it.
But, you know, on that topic, we also wanted to talk about some plot holes of this season, which there aren't many. And I remember you texting me yesterday yeah. and being like, I can't really think of any. And one of the
I wrote
ones
down,
that
where's
we...
Christopher?
Oh, that's a big plot hole. But that was also a plot hole at the end of season three in the graduation. Like, where's yeah. Christopher?
Yeah.
Where are
where
you?
Where did he go?
But with Liz and her storyline, it's not yeah. quite such a plot hole as, like, when Jimmy Mariano arrived on the scene at the end of season three, where we're like, wait a minute, yeah. we thought you went out for diapers and Jess is 17. You know what I mean?
I wish he would have come back with them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, finally got him. And it's like, what? Whereas at the beginning of season two, they basically acted like Jess had, you know, just experienced losing his father in an abandonment yeah. kind of way. And at the same time, we're kind of having the picture of Liz painted in a way, because she's kind of painted as this, like, deadbeat mom who doesn't show up for a kid and couldn't care less about Jess. And when we meet her in season four, we talked about this in our Gilmore to Consider, it's very much not that at all. She is just kind of hippy-dippy, fluid, like, love is love kind of lady, and shows up and just seems like maybe she doesn't quite have herself all figured out, but she's starting to. And that's why yeah. the character of TJ and his introduction and kind of holding Luke accountable to realize that Liz does have room for growth and change is so fascinating, and why, like, their introduction yeah. is one of my favorites, because I feel like it's this big turnaround in her life. We don't really know where she started, but it doesn't quite necessarily align with this person that we meet in the middle of season four.
No, but I will say, to the, like, not showing up for Jess part, that does start to feel like season four is fixing it, or mm. like maybe her relationship with TJ is making her feel more self-assured.
Mm-hmm.
And she is reaching out to Jess and trying to reconnect with him and talk on the phone with him mm. and maybe use things that she learns against people so that she can get into the good graces of Jess.
Yeah.
Like, it's true. Car.
It's very interesting. So that's a little bit of a plot hole to me, because it just feels like it doesn't necessarily align with what we've been told. And
maybe inconsistency. Because, like, with Jimmy, that feels like a major plot hole.
Yes, yes. But also, we talked about this on Patreon, the inconsistency of the, like, car debacle with Jess and, like, yeah, I haven't talked to Jess. Oh, he's in California with his dad. It's like, is he? Was she lying? It just felt like a little messy. So I don't know if that's necessarily a plot hole, but their relationship feels like a little bit of a mystery. And so it was kind of hard to put the pieces together on that front. But I do think at the beginning of season two, when Jess arrives on the scene, I don't know that they ever planned on introducing Jimmy. Maybe they did because of Windward Circle and the spinoff that they, I guess, had in their back pocket. But with Liz, I don't know that they ever intended to introduce her character into the story. Yeah,
maybe that's why they didn't give her too much of a bad background, because I know that the bestie who called in for her voicemail in that episode was saying that she kind of seemed like she had, like, substance abuse problems or could have been an addict. Mm-hmm. But that's not ever something that's spoken to. It's kind of alluded to or, like, based on your understanding of what an absent mom is, maybe you're filling it in with your own reflections or understandings or experiences. Mm-hmm. So maybe they, like, gave you, like, a half picture of her because they were like, we got her in our back pocket. Yeah. We don't want to
fill in the blanks yourself, but we'll fill the blanks in later. Yeah. I don't know. But it is a little bit of a plot hole, just not as big a plot hole as Jimmy was, because that was completely changed.
What happened?
Like, genuinely.
I still want him to show up with diapers.
That would have been funny. Like, I'm back.
Got a little huggies.
Anyway, speaking to other plot holes, where does the lawsuit go? This kind of bleeds into season five, but the lawsuit that Richard and Floyd kind of avoid together by Richard stepping back into business with Floyd, who we also kind of never hear about again. You know, I am curious to kind of suss this out as we walk into season five and we see all the conflict between Richard and Emily start to boil over now that we know that they're separated. I'm curious to hear if there's any info about Floyd and how they're working together, because, you know, Richard starting the Gilmore Group in season two and then ultimately having Jason join as his partner in season four were, like, plot points. And then we just kind of never hear about it again in regards to Richard's job, you know? I assume he still travels for work and stuff, but I'm interested to kind of zero in on Richard working and if that's implemented into the storyline at all, because I don't remember it being for these next couple seasons.
The only thing I remember from this season about Floyd and Richard talking is that just the Gilmore Group is going to be under the umbrella of whatever Floyd.
Right.
Floyd Foundation. I don't know what.
Mm. Yeah, the Floyd Foundation.
Style system. I don't know. Whatever they call. Whatever.
I love the alliteration. I love the trend of the alliteration. It's Gilmore Group, so it's got to be like the Styles system.
Fancy
or the Floyd Foundation. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, whatever. He just kind of exists under the umbrella. So it kind of seems like he has his own little thing going on. And he just like is a subsidiary of Floyd. So I don't know if he works directly with him or like how that works.
Yeah.
But I think the plot hole of that in four is like what Jason was doing after the lawsuit. Because he was like, oh, I've been at work all day. And you're like, no, you haven't.
Where have you actually been?
What's your job doing?
But I think the real plot hole is what happens to the lawsuit with Jason? Because that was a point of, you know, a breaking point for Lorelai and Jason and their relationship at the end of season four. Yeah. And we never hear anything about it after that. We don't even hear anything about it when Richard, Emily, and Jason are all standing in the Dragonfly Inn at the end of the season in Raincoats and Recipes. So where did it go? You know?
Well, I think the plot hole that is greater, that would be an umbrella of under this plot hole, is where does Jason go? Jason genuinely goes to the men's room.
And we never see him again.
At Luke's direction. And he's gone. And I think that
we get
a little Suki reference.
Oh, we do get a little Suki reference at
the
beginning.
She called and said his apartment was flooding or something.
Yeah, on fire or something. I don't know. Interesting. But we never see him again. Like, he just, out of nowhere, just disappears after showing up at the Dragonfly Inn and relentlessly, you know, pursuing this reconciliation with Lorelai, and he's just going to give up? I don't know. I don't know
he
if I buy
gave
that.
Up. His tummy was hurting, so he gave up.
Yeah, so he went home.
So he went home. solved.
Done. Case closed. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. Actually, speaking of cases and speaking of lawsuits, Nicole. Giant question mark is, over Nicole and Luke's
it
relationship.
It also says Dana and Luke's relationship here. I don't know what's going on.
Thank God.
I don't know what's going on.
Here's the thing, is that it just kind of feels like, you know, their reconciliation in the Festival of Living Art at the end is, you know, plot point of, I know, I'm like, what are you doing back here and why are you blonde? So Luke decides to reconcile with Nicole. And, you know, Brett and I talked about this as well. It does make sense that he was like, all right, well, why would we proceed with a divorce if we're just going to date? You know, I kind of get that part of it. It is weird, but I kind of get it. And, you know, they make a big fuss out of it because Lorelai's all put out that he didn't tell her. And then he doesn't tell her about them getting a townhouse together, you know, and then it just kind of fades away. And we don't really hear anything about Nicole. And then all of a sudden, they're fighting like cats and dogs. And he's not wearing his socks. And he's getting divorced. Like, it just kind of happened so fast after being such a point of contention in Lorelai and Luke's relationship. And I don't know if that was to cater to this other thing that was going on with Luke's storyline. Because they built a lot of Luke's story up in season four, which is why he's the star. Top billing for Luke for these reasons. But I don't know if they did that to cater the energy more towards, you know, Luke and Jess's relationship, Luke's new budding relationship with his sister and her soon-to-be husband. You know, I don't know if that's the reason why they pulled back on the Nicole storyline. Because when Liz is introduced and she sees Lorelai trying to, like, Liz is like driving his truck or something, and this is in one of the winter episodes, I think, when Liz is introduced, she's like, oh, you're the wife, and she's like, not the wife, just the customer and friend.
Is this a family matter?
This might be a family matter. It's either that or Nag Hammadi is where they found the Gnostic Gospels, because this is when Lorelai needs her window fixed. I don't remember if it's that one or if it's a family matter, but either way, this is when Jess returns.
No, I think it is Nag Hammadi, because this is when Lorelai comes and yells at Jess.
And Luke is like bleeding and he's drunk and trying to fix her window.
So
she's running after his truck because the house feels like the Arctic tundra and she needs him to fix it. But I think that, you know, we get some mention of Nicole, but, you know, there's not a ton there. And then out of nowhere, they're fighting. And that's a plot line for Luke in one of these episodes. And he's all crabby and we can't really figure out why. And that just feels like a giant question mark over it. Like, where did that all go wrong?
And like the whole point of them fighting is that we don't know what they're fighting about. Like, that's the whole the whole plot line is we have not figured out.
We've
they're not telling us. They're happening out in the square where we're trying to read their lips. Even when they're talking to each other, they're not saying anything and informing us of anything. So it's kind of just like, you guys haven't, we haven't seen you guys for so long, and now you're angry, which, like,
and now
to
you're
me,
front and center.
It feels, it feels equal parts plot hole, equal parts 2000s television that was happening week to week, and they're like, previously on, you guys remember Nicole? She's coming back today.
Exactly. So it's just a little mystery to me. It's like you
little
kind
mystery,
of gave it to
yeah.
us, and then you pulled back on it, and then you fed it to us as if we were supposed to care about this relationship still, and we don't. Like, I didn't. And I'm sitting here going, why are you fighting? I don't really care. I just kind of want to know, because it's the only plot line that Luke has in this episode. And then all of a sudden he's not wearing his socks, and that becomes a whole thing. And so it's like, you're cheating on him. And maybe it's because, you know, he's not home very often, because that seems to be the last word that Nicole has, is like, oh, you're gonna come to our house. Funny. Like, you assume that it's because he's never there and maybe he's not showing up for her, but we don't actually get confirmation of that. And maybe it's because Amy knew that the audience maybe wasn't meant to care about this relationship because he's on the path to Lorelai. But at the same time,
like, let's not build it up too much.
But like, looking back on it, I'm just kind of like, hey, I don't get it.
This was loose.
It's a little loose.
This was loose.
But those are the plot holes I had written down. What other, did you have any? Others?
No, the other one was, where is Christopher?
Where is Christopher?
Because where is Christopher?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we'll get him
next. That's the extent of that question.
Next season, don't you worry.
you know that moment? Did you watch Schitt's Creek, or at least have you heard the sound of Moira when she's like standing at the front desk and there's that man there and like it's silent for quite some time and she goes, "Where did you come from?" Like that feels like Christopher, like his reappearance. It's like, what? Who are you? Yeah. What are you doing back here?
Yeah. I haven't seen that. You know, I started Schitt's Creek a couple years ago and I didn't get into it, but everybody has told me that I need to watch it in its entirety.
Controversially, I could never get into it and I watched it in its entirety.
Yeah. There you go. I gotta yeah. do it. But
I like the clips of it though. The clips, the reels, and I like those a lot better.
Oh, they're so funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of storylines that maybe didn't make sense, what were your favorite storylines or favorite conflict from this season?
Can I be honest? I think that my favorite conflict / storyline for like the whole season, like the arc, was Emily and Richard. I just felt like the setup, like the way that it played out, the little mm-hmm. sneak attack with his mom dying, where you think things are going to be fine, and then it comes back and like just like all of their interactions that happen and Emily's reasoning behind it mm. and Richard kind of just becoming this little bit of a villain. What did we call mm-hmm. him? Tricky Dick? Lying Dick? Because he was like, you don't like when people lie to you, and he was lying.
I know.
I don't know. Just like the whole arc of how that all transpires. I yeah. just loved it. I thought it was so
no,
good.
No, it was very well done. It was doled out to us very slowly. Like,
yeah,
it's a slow build. And contrary to the conflict with Nicole and Luke, who we obviously don't care about nearly as much as we care about Emily and Richard, they did it really well. It was very detailed and very nuanced, and yeah. it was laid out pretty perfectly because there are peaks and valleys to it, right? Again, yeah. in the third Lorelei, you know, Emily really loses it, as does Richard, yeah. but it kind of brings Lorelei. Them back together. I'm sorry, the reigning Lorelei. Third Lorelei is when we meet her. Reigning Lorelei is when we say yeah. bye-bye. And
she got it from the table. She left the table.
She left the table. World. She left the earth. She left the world.
So good.
True. It is true. But when we see them come together at the end of that, we're like, oh, reconciliation. It's been so yes. bad between the two of them. We're finally going to get to see them reconcile.
They both lost their minds. And now they're good.
And then.
Because that's what family does.
It all implodes. And yeah. I just thought it was so gorgeously doled out to us in a way that we didn't get with some of the other plot lines. But I think this one arguably was the most important to do
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And like, yeah, just like it was so cohesive and just everything that happened. And I loved that towards the end of the season when they finally realized, like when she pulled out and Lorelai and Rory are hiding in the bush and Lorelai's like, is my mom not sleeping here tonight? Mm. That we don't get that scene from Emily and Richard of them fighting, because we do get scenes of them on their own. Mm-hmm. Like we do get a lot of building just the two of them. We get them, Richard and Jason, alone. So it's mm-hmm. like, it's not unusual that we would have gotten a scene where we see them fighting and we see like kind of the implosion between the two of them that would cause them to not mm-hmm. want to stay at the same house anymore. But I'm glad we didn't. I'm glad that it was like from the Gilmore Girls perspective of yeah. like, oh, they totally. Are imploding and going mad.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I know a lot of people don't, because they don't want to see Emily and Richard in a bad place.
But listen, but it's the same way that we kind of feel like bad feels about the Gilmore Girls having conflict in season 6, or at least I feel that way, because like at some point there are going to be issues, right? Things can't be perfect and sunshine and rainbows all the time. And that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a split, a rift, etc. But isn't that much more exciting to watch?
It yeah, because the reunion, like in 6, when the two of them get back together. Rory
that hug?
Lorelai,
oh my God.
That hug. But then like when the whole like first half of season 5 is about the Emily and Richard riff. And I love that. Like mm-hmm. the setup here for that is just so good. And
yeah,
it's just one of my favorite storylines. I love it. I love it so much.
I had a feeling you would say that one. I had a feeling really? You would actually agree with the one that I put down, which of course was Luke and Jess. I mean, the conflict.
That was what I wrote down. Everything to do with Luke and Jess. Yeah.
The conflict, the like the reconciliation, the rebuilding of their relationship. It's so delicious to watch.
Yeah.
It's so
good. When
he
comes and yells at him and he was like, you're going to regret this. And he shows up and he said, because it was important to you. I'm like, yes. And then they have this like moment of like, you really told her you loved her. And he gives them the book. And it's just, oh, like, cut off everything with Jess after the Luke stuff, when before he goes and tries to get Rory to run away with him. Mm-hmm. But like, up until that, it is like Luke. This is the love story of Luke and Jess this season.
Really. 100%.
That's the love that's being spread here.
What I love about it is that Jess comes back in a lot of ways for Rory. You know, he tells her he loves her and runs away. He, you know, is hesitant to come back because he feels like the ball was in her court after he did that, and that's why he wasn't going to come back for his mom's wedding, and Luke kind of forces him to do so. And what I love about it is that he comes back for Rory in a lot of ways and ends up sticking around for Luke. It ends up serving the purpose of his relationship to become deeper with Luke. And this is the turning point for Jess Mariano is season 4. And I just love it. I love their relationship. I love that this is the romance that we root for, you know, after Jess and Rory break up, at least for me. You know, because as much as my young heart really wanted the two of them to reconcile and work out, and like a part of me still roots for that, of course, I just think the relationship with Jess and Luke is gorgeous all around. Yeah. No notes. Their journey is really beautiful.
Yeah. And I do love the like juxtaposition of like early, like 2 and 3 Jess and Luke versus 2 and 3 Jess and Rory versus them in season 4. It feels like Jess and Luke were always at odds, but he did show up for him. Mm-hmm. Like, Jess really did show up for Luke in various ways. He fixed the toaster without being asked. Like, he Louis's did. Funeral. He opened the door. So, like, there's moments. But he's really trying with Rory. And it's kind of just inadvertent that things happen with Luke. But then it really flips around in 4. Mm-hmm. But he's trying with Rory. Like, he's showing up, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's the Luke that really...
It's so good.
It really works, and I love it. Aww.
Well, on that topic, I put my least favorite conflict / storyline was Jess and Rory a little bit.
Really?
You
More
know,
so than Asher?
Well, Asher and Rory is in all caps. Because it's not even Asher and Paris. Like, that to me is just kind of like, okay. It's Asher and Rory.
It was a little bit, because she's 19 and he's 60.
Correct. Which is correct. Gross.
New 50?
But I also wrote, I think, the new 40.
Yeah.
The new 40, she says. Or 60 is what 40 was 30 years ago or something. I forget what exactly she says.
Was what 50 was? Yeah. I forget. There's
60 is what
50
was 20 years ago or something. I was like, isn't that 40? Yeah. I don't get it. Anyway, but Asher and Rory is a conflict that I really didn't like. And it falls in line with one of my least favorite episodes, After Boom. That episode for me is just, ugh. And it's one of my least favorite conflicts because I think the Asher Rory like headbutting is really weird. And I know she's questioning her grade because of her relationship with Paris, but the way she speaks to him is super disrespectful. And don't get me wrong, this man should not be dating a 19-year-old. It's gross.
Yeah. He should be talked to disrespectfully.
Sure. But it's just like, I don't know, some of the ways in which Rory does talk to him just feel very...
It was weird.
Weird,
offensive, but not offensive towards Asher, offensive towards women. And it just,
yes,
it was a strange inclusion, especially because the storyline could have been better, because that was the one where she was thinking that he was playing favorites and favoritism because she got such a good grade on her paper when she thought she had failed. Mm. And she got like one of the highest grades, and she thought it was because she was dating or she was roommates with his girlfriend, which doesn't make any sense. But the much more interesting conflict would have been if people thought that she was his new, quote unquote, the new girl, like his girl this year, or whatever Doyle says. Like,
yeah, like flavor so of the more, year. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, it was just weird.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a good storyline. It like that episode was otherwise really, really good, but Rory really weighed it down, as like she does
really
towards the end of the season.
She does,
because there's a lot of like banger episodes that Rory just does. She's the weakest link.
Yeah. And you know, to go hand in hand with that, the reason that I say that the Jess and Rory conflict was one of my least favorites, it's really just about everything that happens in Last Week Fights This Week Tights. Like,
yeah,
the way that he comes to her at Yale, it just feels so out of character. I don't want to say it feels out of character for Jess to be reckless, because it's not. Jess is a reckless, reckless guy. But just the, like, come with me to the Emerald City. Like, you know, it's very... I just feel like it's so...
We said that then, too.
We did.
to Jess City.
Yeah. I don't know. It just rubbed me the wrong way now watching it as an adult when as a kid I was like, go with him. Just leave with him. And
which
go.
The moment I liked, but it was the lack of development up until then because Rory had so many weak storylines. It would have been so easy to just slip one in to like actually give that some sort of heft to it.
Because
it just felt like a really weighty, heavy storyline that didn't have anything to ground it in previous episodes. And I think that was why.
Yeah.
Because like the moment felt like something Jess would do, especially after having received that book.
It makes sense. It just for me felt like a train wreck that I had to keep watching and I didn't want to, but I couldn't look away, you know?
So sorry.
So it goes hand in hand. Asher and Rory is probably my least favorite conflict of the entire season. I just felt like it was poorly handled in that episode after Boom. And also Luke and Nicole, speaking to the plot holes of it all, like I felt like their storyline conflict was just kind of, didn't really make a ton of sense.
Better between them or like for Luke.
Yeah.
I agree with all of those. Those were all ones that I wrote down, even though we said that we were only going to write down one.
I know. I wrote down three.
But sorry. The one that took the cake for me was in Diger, Rory's storyline with writing the ballerina and the fat phobia of that. And that she came back and she's like, no, it was about the costume. And it's like, nope, then you insult the costume. You don't insult the person wearing it.
Yeah.
And just like that whole thing, it felt gross. It felt weird. It felt weird that the ballerina came back and said Diger. Die jerk. I'm like,
I know.
Okay, let's not wish death on people, but let's also not criticize our classmates' body type in the school newspaper rather than her skill as a ballerina. So I didn't like that. That's one of my least favorite storylines in the whole series, but
did not like that.
It didn't feel like a real. It didn't go anywhere beyond that one episode. So it was just really just the die jerk of it all.
Yeah,
but the other ones were like more like overarching storylines that I didn't
love.
But that one I didn't like at all.
Me either. And on that topic, speaking to faves and least faves, we were going to do episodes next, and so I wrote down my least favorite episodes first. I had a tough time coming up with three, so I only did two, and it's Die Jerk and After Boom.
Really? Oh, because see, I loved the Lorelai storyline in After Boom. And that was why it was so hard for me to pick them, because I just couldn't.
Yeah, the Lorelai storyline in After Boom is good, but
like with her parents, it's
Rory
just
weighs
not
it down so much that I, you know, again, nothing but bangers for me in season four, so it was hard for me to even pick two.
Yeah,
but if I had to pick two, those were the ones that I remember walking away being like, mid.
Yeah,
mid episode. Yeah,
that one. Another one that you said was mid was actually Raining Lorelai.
It was also mid
at the end of it. You were kind of like, meh. So I put Die Jerk, chicken or beef, because I was just, I remember at the end of that one just being like, again, I don't dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
It just was like on my lower ranking than some of these other ones. And I put, if I could put half of one, I'd put like half of After Boom.
Yeah. the Rory
and
half
I
of
put
After
Raining
Boom.
Lorelai, yeah. The Rory half of a lot of episodes, admittedly.
Yeah.
But I put Raining Lorelai, even though looking back on it, I was like, oh, I loved that one.
No, it's a good episode. I mean, like, you can't deny the, you know, the falling apart of the Gilmore household. Richard just
and
absolutely
then the Rory
losing
and Richard
it.
Part.
Oh, my God.
Like,
yeah.
That was a good Rory storyline. Oh, I take it back. I can't do it because that one was.
Yeah, that's why I didn't write it down. I was because it. I was like, I mean, we get the iconic Emily just absolutely unraveling in her robe. It's just so good that I couldn't put it down.
Good.
But there were some like misses for me in that episode. But with After Boom as a whole, I was like,
yeah. Okay, I'm going to say Die Jerk, chicken or beef, and the Rory half of After Boom.
Okay, those are respectable. I love chicken or beef. I think of the guys walking into Luke singing the Stars Hollow High
song. See, I'm really only thinking of the end.
Yeah, and, like, I think the episode as a whole is actually very good.
You're right. I did like that one.
We can just do two. We don't have to do three.
Okay, well, I'll do one and a half then. I'll do Die Jerk and the Rory half of After Boom.
Glad we came to a consensus. So what were your three favorite episodes?
This was hard.
Hard. I have two as a tie for number three.
Really? Okay. So this one, the first one was so easy. Like Didn't even have to think about it. It was Lorelai's first day at Yale.
Number one.
Every single time.
Every time.
Bop, bang, boomer, certified banger. One of my favorite episodes in the whole series. So good. Mm-hmm. And next I put Luke can see her face.
That's number three for me, which was tough because what a fantastic episode. Like,
so good.
So good. But for number two for me was the Festival of Living Art.
See, that was in my consideration. I love, that's when Gil shows up on the scene.
It's when Gil shows up. It's just a great townies episode. It's a fantastic representation of how the town comes together.
Kirk but Tide, Jesus.
Oh, I know. It's so good. When we watched that, Brett said that that was one of his favorite episodes. Like, he so really good. Loved it. But
see, I told you this when we were talking about it the other day, that I was going to have a hard time not putting later episodes at the top because we just watched them, because we watched Festival of Living Art like what, January?
I know.
And then there was like a segment of them where we watched like probably like seven of them like right in a row because yeah. of like scheduling wise, and we had to record them.
I know.
But oh, that one's good. What's your next one?
Number three for me was Luke Can See Her Face, but it was tied closely with Raincoats and Recipes. I mean, it's just such a great episode.
Yeah.
But I would also love to put Ted Koppel's Big Night Out. Also a great episode.
That's what I put third.
That's what you put as
third. But like, I also want to put Last Week Frights the Sweet Tights because like that was a good episode too.
The only reason I didn't put that one, because that is one that I would say like half the episode is my fave. But everything that happens with Rory, with her going out with the guy, like the sleazy guy to the bar,
yeah.
and then she calls Dean, and then Dean takes her back to her dorm, and then Jess shows up. I'm like, okay, no. But no, the wedding part and everything that happens with Lorelai and Luke, like yes. that part of it, 1,000%. But as a whole, I honestly think that it's flanked by two of the best episodes, which would be Luke Can See Her Face and then Raincoats and Recipes, because like I loved those episodes in their entirety. And same with Ted Koppel's Big Night Out, like loved it in its entirety. Festival of Living Art, like such a bop. And of course, the Lorelai's
so
first day at Yale. Like, there's no scenes that I would necessarily pick out of those and be like, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, you're right.
So, do I have a top three? No, I just named five for you. But I love every single one of them.
Yeah. But Ted Koppel, that was what I put third.
It's such a good
admittedly,
episode.
Admittedly, it auto-corrected and it says Red Kipper, but I know it says Ted Koppel.
Red Kipper and Dana. Dana and the Red Kipper. So well. It's a great band name.
That's my new novel. Releasing this week. Dana and the Red Kipper. But yeah. Oh, Ted Koppel is just so good. Ted Koppel feels like nostalgic Gilmore Girls. And I don't know why. Like, there's some of them that, like, they just hit me. They just hit me in the teenage feels.
In the feels. I know. It's so good. Well, speaking of rankings, I know that we wanted to do our rankings a little differently for how this season falls into our rankings in general. So let's start with personal or storyline?
Let's go with personal. I think personal, because like in re-listening to the end of the season three recap, I had listed where I had started. So I guess at the end of season one, where I was at in terms of my personal ranking, it was wild, simply wild. It was 5, 6, 4, 3, 7, revival 2, 1 was my ranking. And I listened to that and I was like, was she on drugs? I think that she wasn't on drugs yet.
She wasn't.
The problem.
And that's part of the problem.
Now she's on Lexapro and everything is fine.
This podcast is sponsored by Lexapro.
Oh, I wish. Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be great.
But it just makes things better. But talk to your doctor first. But anyway.
Yes.
But the going back to that, I'm like, I want to change it dramatically. Like, but okay. Where I ended up at the end of that episode was 5, 6, 4, 2, 3, 7, revival 1. Like, I guess I hated season 1. I didn't hate it, but that's just where I ended up personally.
And this is personal preference, right?
Yeah. And I think it's completely different. And, like, it has to do a lot with the fact that we have only watched 1 through 4. We've seen the rest. But, like, I kind of want to knock 6 down a little bit. And I think it's because I haven't seen it.
That's because why I was wondering if you wanted to do it with just 1 through 4.
Yeah. But with personal, maybe we should just do 1 through 4. But like, I think that where I'm at in all of them is 5, 4, 2, 6, 3, 1, revival 7.
That's a great ranking.
I think that's where I'm at.
That's like, a great ranking.
it went way up. But like I had a really hard time with 2 and 4. Mm-hmm. Like which one to put first, because I was like, I don't know. 4 really changed everything. 4 changed everything for
me. I know. I actually said at the end of the season 3 recap that I wanted to wait until we did our season 4 recap to talk about anything personal rankings wise, not to talk about anything personal in general. You know me, open book. I'm an oversharer. But, you know, I feel like it's really hard for me to rank this right now because I feel like season 1, like those early seasons still feel so good to watch, even though I feel like story-wise, they don't necessarily...
They're not as cohesive. Throughout the whole season, there's like segments that really work. But yeah. Like in terms of like a seasonal arc for like each individual character and their relationships and the things that are going on. Mm-hmm. Some of the ones that we love don't really hold up as much. I'm interested to see where 5 lands for me.
Yeah,
because like that's always been like a top one.
Yeah. But I think that if I had to, personal, and I'm doing this off the cuff because I only ranked.
Well, do you mean to tell you what you? Do you mean to tell them what you had listed for personal at the end of 3?
I wrote it down.
Yeah.
So for personal, I put 2, 3, 1, 5, 4, 6, revival, 7. And I think that what would shift for me is that it would probably now be.
This is like episode you're going to reach for and you're going to watch it while you eat a piece of cake.
It's going to be 2, 3, 4, 1, 5, 6, revival, 7.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm hesitant to even like, it's just because seasons 1 through 3 are my comfort seasons, but now I'm adding 4 into the fold. And I feel like 4 and 3 now kind of sit next to each other instead of on top of like one on top of the other, because I feel like
as numbers
they do. But I think it's because they're just so, they're both comfy to watch, but season 3 lacks the consistency for me now, whereas season 4 has a lot more consistency. So if I wanted to put something on and watch it all the way through, like, you know how we popcorn around, I feel like if I put on something at season 4 and I let it ride, I'm going to be really happy with the ride. Whereas with season 3, I wasn't as happy with the ride when we were watching it. I was like, what am I watching right now?
There's a lot of skips, I feel like, or like fast forwarding. And I feel like less so in 4. Like, I wouldn't call any single episode a skip. I might fast forward through a Rory scene, but like even then,
but
I'm
like season 4 is kind of a no skip season for me, and so because of that, it's hard. I'm almost apt to say 2, 4, 3, 1, you know, because but it's because after a certain point in season 3, I'm kind of like, eh, even though like
because the end of 3 sucks. I'm just gonna say it, like
kind of in the middle of 3 really sucks. Like, I solemnly swear the whole Francie storyline is just such a bore to me, and I feel like it was lazy. It was really poorly fleshed out. We talked about that in the season 3 recap. I just feel like with season 4, it's just so cohesive, but season 3 has like so many cutie Jess Mariano episodes.
It's that 3 in the middle. It's the
They shoot Gilmore's, don't they? Let the Games Begin and Deep Fried Korean Thanksgiving. And Dave Rogowski's in that season. Like, there are just so many bops. But then there will be wide stretches of episodes that I could do without. And then it'll be like, it'll be A Tale of Pose and Fire and Happy Birthday Baby. And, you know, so Face good. Off. Like, episodes that I love and that I would love to watch. But
and those are
they
strings,
come in pockets.
Like ending on that.
And Those Are Strings is such a great episode. So it's hard. They sit neck and neck for different reasons, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I stand right now.
Where would you be at storytelling wise if we're just going to do the first 4?
First 4, it's 2, 4, 3, 1 for me.
Same.
Yeah. 2, 4, 3, 1. Season 2 was just
so hard. It's so good. And I was thinking about this in terms of, do you like the season 2 finale better or the season 4?
Ooh. That is how I determined this. They're both so strong in very different ways.
Very different ways.
They're both very strong. I will say that the season four finale leaves us, oh, I was going to say on more of a cliffhanger. The stakes feel higher in the season four finale.
Way higher. The stakes are so high.
But in season two,
sky high.
It's almost like, not that the stakes are low, Rory kisses Jess and we have no idea. Like, that's what we've all been waiting for this whole season, is for the two of them to just fucking kiss.
We all, Tara.
We all, meaning me. 14-year-old me, under the covers, portable DVD player. We all know what's up. But
we all know what's up.
Christopher and Lorelai, you know, that cliffhanger was just like, punch you in the face.
Yeah.
But then arguably at the end of season four, now she's finally kissed Luke. That's finally going to be a thing. And Dean and Rory sleep together. Like, I don't know. I still think it's season two.
I still think it's season two. I like struggled so hard with this morning because I like had ranked four over two. But I just like, I couldn't do it just because, and like, you know that I don't think every episode in two is a bop.
Yeah.
I'm not a Bracebridge dinner fan. I kind of like Secrets and Loans, but like, there's so many good ones. There's The Rub. Like,
oh my God.
There's a lot.
A Tisket, a Tasket. Like, there are just, there are so many. we could go down the list, but
we're
we already
both wearing
did.
A little basket.
We are. It's true.
But yeah, so I like went way back and forth on it, but
I know.
For me, it ended up with 2-4-3-1 in terms of storytelling, and I'm very interested to see where Five falls on that,
where Five
because
falls.
She has been my favorite forever.
Storytelling and personally.
Yeah, because I moved Six way down, but I think it's simply because I have been depriving myself of Six for so long that I'm like, what happens in that season again?
I know. I'm intrigued to see how I feel when I get there because I have no attachment to it whatsoever. And a lot of my feelings on that season are purely rooted in how uncomfy it is to watch the rift of Lorelai and Rory. But from a storytelling perspective, I got to be objective. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. And we'll get there sometime later this year. No, this year.
Is it this year, later this year?
It is.
Fun.
It's in the fall. I think in October.
It's going to be the summer of season five, though, which like, I don't, when I said that, the sun just came out. That was fun.
Yes.
Wow.
The sun will come out for
season
YouTube,
five.
Suddenly. Move over,
I
Annie.
Know. The sun will come out for season five.
Love when you say.
Get your bottom dollar.
Bet your bottom dollar it's coming out.
So yeah, it really is. But it's coming, season five is coming out on Patreon on Friday, which I'm just so pumped about because, as you know, I don't watch season five, episode one and two. Like, I'm a heavy skipper.
Mm-hmm. We usually start with Written in the Stars, but... No, we're coming in hot with I mentioned this. I don't think I mentioned this in our Gilmore to Consider, but I mentioned it in on Patreon that I really love watching things that we've already seen before from a different perspective. And I'm very excited about the intro to season five, because even though I hate the content, I really do love watching the scene play out again from Dean's perspective. And it's just something that from a cinematography angle, and a storytelling angle, I just love. I don't know
when
why.
You watch him escape.
Yeah. I don't know if it was because Back to the Future growing up was my favorite movie, and in that movie and in the subsequent films, you see the same scenes play over again from a different angle, and I don't know why as a kid that really got me. So I'm excited. I'm excited to get into season five as a whole. It's a fantastic season. It's ranked very, very high storytelling wise for me. So I'm curious to see
if that holds
how
up.
I feel.
We didn't do this for three. We were going to, but then we actually never recorded the second half of the episode, which was our season four predictions.
I noticed that at the end of the episode. Do I have any predictions? I predict I will like it. I hope. I predict that Wedding Bell Blues will probably be my favorite episode.
Ooh.
But I am curious to see if my mind has changed. I predict that I will like the middle of the season, like the meat and potatoes of it, more than I like the bookends.
Yeah.
More than I like the beginning in like the Pippi Virgin era, and more than I like, Blaine Booz and Melville.
Yeah. I think I actually feel the same. Also, I predict that Pippi Virgin will be my least favorite episode when we do our season five recap.
I have a feeling that will also be one of my least favorite episodes. But
Uncozy.
not very cozy whatsoever. So we'll see. I don't really have many predictions on top of that, nor am I excited to predict the coffee count.
Oh.
Because our coffee count prediction this season was so off.
Oh my God, egregious.
We had 66, 67, 68 for seasons 1 through 3 on the coffee count. That is what the tally
Which
came
was
to.
Crazy.
So yeah. We automatically assumed that a 69 would be coming up for season 4. And let me tell you, there is nary a coffee cup in season 4. Yeah. Not a lot of coffee drinking in this season. We had a total
lots
of 47.
Talking about coffee.
Lots of talking about coffee, but not a lot of actual consumption of coffee. And so yeah. We had 47 cups of coffee.
47. And that was like us like pulling, trying really hard.
Oh my
we have
God.
Like a little bit of like a rule of like if Luke pours a cup of coffee for Lorelai and she leaves before the scene has ended and she did not drink it, we don't count it. But I feel like in season 4, we were getting a little bit more lax with them because we're like, God, we just need some coffee. Like, is there coffee on the table? Cool. Great. We're counting it.
It's counted.
Just because it was so little. I feel like it was like they had established themselves as caffeinated girlies in the, you know, the audience that they were like, we don't need it anymore.
I know. So we have a total of 248 cups of coffee across the entire series so far from seasons 1 through 4. What are your predictions, coffee cup count-wise, for season 5?
So we were at 47. I'm just going to do season 5. I'm going to do 55.
I was going to do 54.
Oh my gosh, how fun.
That's fine.
I love 54. That. 54. It'll be 54 and a half.
Yeah. One half cup of coffee. Perfect.
One half cup.
Yeah, 54 was going to be my guess. You're 55. We'll see. I think we'll get, I don't know. I don't want to say anything after
I'm
this
not gonna
season.
Jinx
this season
anything because it's probably going to be 4.
I know. This season was such a letdown coffee wise, but they talk about it a lot. Yeah. We'll see if like maybe the introduction of the coffee cart being more regularly in tune with Rory's schedule. Yeah.
Logan buys her a lot of coffee at the coffee cart. I guess that's more than 6. Oh my God, 6 is going to be hard because Logan buys her a whole coffee cart. How do we count that?
Oh my God, I know. That's so true. Anyway, that is our season 4 recap. We loved this season. Yeah. I'm so sad to see
we
it go.
Season 4.
But you know who I'm not necessarily sad to see go? Jason Styles.
That our little plot hole, the disappearance of Jason Styles.
Honestly, it should be a true crime series. The disappearance of Jason Styles.
Because our next episode is about Jason, and maybe it's a true crime episode.
Dun, oh my dun, God. Yeah, we've been teasing a Jason Styles episode for quite some time. I think that on TikTok, a lot of people asked us about our feelings on it. I remember when people would be like, what do you think about Jason? And I was always just like, huh, what do I think
I
about
really
Jason?
Jason.
Yeah.
But this season, this whole season, I have had a Jason episode notes because we talked about after our season 4 recap, we're like, we have to do a Jason episode. We did a Max episode. We kind of did a Luke, kind of did a Christopher, and we're like, we have to talk about Jason. We never see him again. So we've gotten all the information that we need on him in this rewatch. Mm-hmm. And all season long, I have been making Jason notes because I have been back and forth on this man. But I think I have come up with a conclusion to how I feel about Jason.
And we'll have more to say on that in the next episode.